I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. We're going to talk about creativity. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. Later on, we're going to open the phones to explore how you might be leading a more creative life. But first, we talk with a youngster discovered by Quincy Jones at age six, child musical prodigy Emily Bear. Right now, we have a music performance of hers posted at our website, WNPR.org, search programs for the Faith Middleton Show. And you'll also see articles about child prodigies and what babies can hear in the womb. Our guest, Emily Bear, is now 12. She plays jazz and classical, has two mentors, Quincy Jones and orchestrator Chris Yonke. She is scheduled to perform in Connecticut this summer and fall. We have that posted, too, at WNPR.org. Before we begin our conversation with Emily, I'd like you to hear a little of what she does. She floored Quincy Jones when she was six, and here she is today at age 12 performing Hot Peppers. That is Emily Bear, age 12, lives in Chicago, performing Hot Peppers. Emily, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi. Seriously, you can swing, kiddo.
Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. So, do you have a? You feel like you have a good memory?
What?
Do you feel like you have a good memory?
Pretty much. Although in grammar, not so much. But pretty much, yeah.
Let's see if we can go back in time a little bit. I mean, somebody once asked me to do this, and I really had to think for a minute. So I don't mean to catch you by surprise. But if you go back, because you've only been around 12 years, but if you search your memory, do you remember what's the first sound that you can remember? I don't care what it was, but just the sound of something that struck you, you know?
Well, I don't really remember that far back, but I remember when I was about 3 years old, and I was just playing the piano, and my cousins were over, and I was about to turn four, and it was a Sunday, and I wrote this little piece called Sunday Morning.
You wrote it yourself?
Yeah.
And had you had music lessons up to that point?
No.
Ah, and so did you write it down, or do you mean you kind of memorized it in your head?
I kind of memorized it in my head, but then we also wrote it down in this little manuscript paper thing. But now I actually record it. I also do it by hand, but I usually record it now.
Mm-hmm. So I, you know, you have to practice a lot, and you have lessons now, and you play with all kinds of people, and I have these two relatives who are athletic coaches in my family,
mm-hmm.
and both of them can get upset sometimes when they're watching other teams, because they want the kids that they work with to work really hard to learn, but they also want the kids that they work with to still feel like it's fun, that it's like playing. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I think that's the most important thing of everything, is to keep it fun. And if I didn't think it was fun and I didn't want to do any of this, then I would not be doing it, but I do. So.
Okay. So what do you think it gives you that makes you feel good about it? Can you put that into words?
Excuse me, what did you say?
If when you think about what playing, you know, making music gives you, you know, like the gift that it is, how it makes you feel good, well, how do you think, what is that? How does it make you feel good?
Well, it usually depends on the mood I'm in, but it's really hard to explain, but it's like I can communicate through my music, and I love how it makes people feel, and it makes me feel the same way.
Mm.
And it's like a way I can communicate emotions through my music. And I can tell stories through it. Yes.
Oh, I love that description, Emily. Oh, that's wonderful. You know, it's just, you made me think of something I've never thought of before, that a lot of kids, and some grown-ups still do this, keep a diary in, you know, to express their emotions. And in a way, this music is your diary.
Exactly.
So how about a musical family? Yes?
Yeah, I have quite a diverse musical family.
Yeah, you mean, so you have siblings who play, parents?
Yeah, my brother plays saxophone, tenor saxophone, guitar, and piano. And my sister sings. She plays the piano, and she also plays the harp.
Mm.
And my mom plays the piano, and she sang in Broadway.
Oh, wow. So you come from a real musical family.
Yeah, everyone knows how to play an instrument except for my dad.
Okay. So he's the audience.
What?
He's the audience. Listen, so let's imagine that you're playing, and I often wonder what people ask me sometimes, you know, when you're talking with somebody or somebody's on the radio, you know, what do you imagine? What are you picturing? Because I'm, you know, just like you are right now sitting in a room, I'm sitting in a studio. So I imagine all kinds of things. When you're performing, what are you thinking of? I mean, do you picture scenes?
Well, you won't believe this, but when I'm playing my own music, I picture stories and stuff and people and whatever. But when I'm playing music that's not my music, I usually think of all the ways I could mess up.
Oh, huh. So that's like a little devil on your shoulder, isn't it?
No, but I usually
you know, that's what I think about. When I concentrate on, you know, how am I going to mess up, I think, uh-oh, there's a little devil on my shoulder. And I usually say, get out of here, so that I don't concentrate on that.
Oh, yeah. But usually when I'm playing my own music and I play I do this fun game where people say stories and then I make up music to them on the spot. And so I always find it fun to picture like a little movie in my head as I play it.
Uh-huh.
And so that's one of my favorite things to do.
Wow, Emily, it would be so fun to be in the same space sometime, because when I'm driving in the car and I look out at people doing things in life, in my head I see it, you know, I think, wow, what if this had a soundtrack? You know, it would be like a movie. And it made me understand why people want to do music for movies.
Yeah, when I was in Aspen when I was seven or eight, I can't remember, but we went hiking in this place called the Maroon Bells. And on the way there, we were on a bus. And the bus rider started talking about the aspen trees and how when they go to the trees, they start crinkling like little bells. Mm. And so after we got back, I wrote a piece, and I kind of tried to make it sound like the leaves crinkling in the wind.
Mm, I like that. I once talked to a musician who said to me that she felt like she was singing when she was playing, even though she's not really singing.
What?
I have a musician that I met, who said she felt like she was singing when she was playing, you know, even though she wasn't actually singing, you know, that the instrument was like a song to her coming out of her voice. Have you ever had that feeling?
Yeah, that's like one of the most important things I think of playing piano is you have to sing through like what you play. I actually wrote a song called Rosario Sings for my first piano teacher when he got cancer. And I always said that I wrote it because he sings for all of his students.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And those hands, yeah.
Oh, that's nice. So we're going to talk to, your other mentor, Chris Yonke. But let me just ask a quick question about Quincy Jones. You know, he has been a mentor of yours since you were six, right?
I've actually known him since I was eight.
Since eight, okay. And how would you say he has helped you as a mentor?
Well, he's taught me a lot of things, not only in music, but in life. And he always says, the most important thing is that your music is only as good as the person you are inside.
Oh, wow, isn't he a wise man? So, Emily, would you do me a favor? Because we're going to take a quick break. It'll be short. And then on the other side of this break, so you stay where you are, I want to ask Chris to join the conversation, and then we can all talk together, okay?
Okay.
Okay, I'll be right back. I'm Faith Middleton. Great to have you listening, especially now, because we have as our guest the remarkable 12-year-old pianist Emily Baer talking with us from her home in Chicago. Her music is posted now at our website, along with information about her performances in Clinton and New Haven, Connecticut in August and October. Emily was discovered at age six by her, or at age eight, I should say, by her co-mentor, Quincy Jones, and we're on now with her other mentor, the award-winning orchestrator Chris Yonke, who got an early start here in Connecticut at the Good Speed. By the way, at our website, we also have these articles about child prodigies, because we all try and understand where this comes from. And there's a science story by a neuroscientist, big study about what a fetus can hear in the womb after that fetus is born. There's neural memory, the story says. So that's at WNPR.org, search programs for the Faith Middleton Show. Orchestrator Chris Yonke is in New York. Are you there, Chris?
I'm here on an iPhone in Midtown.
Hey, that's very nice, very nice.
Hopefully you can hear me. It's a little hard to hear you, but I'll do my best.
Okay, and I'm having an allergy attack, so we're all in the same boat. Chris, what is it about Emily as a person that you like?
Well, when I first met her, it was clear that she was interested in, it was just clear there was this music dripping off this kid. It was just, she was extraordinary. And just talking to her for 10 minutes, what I think I liked most, or what I felt most I could relate to, was that she really enjoys creating music for a visual medium. She likes film scoring. She likes, again, what she said earlier, it's about her creating something that is, it's going to accompany some sort of visual medium, whether it's a stage or film. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of what I ultimately, what attracted me to actually becoming a musician when I was 5 years old.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know that you worked on the Tony-winning show Memphis. You were nominated for a Tony for the most recent Broadway production of Porgy and Bess. So here you are, this orchestrator. What does that mean?
Well, it means I guess the best way to describe it is somebody composes, in its most rare and its most basic form, somebody composes a song, whether on guitar or piano or whatever medium is right for that person that's writing it. And it's the orchestrator's job and or the arranger's job, and there's a very fine line between both, is to take that, whatever it is, it's a guitar piece or a piano piece, and then create an orchestral medium for it to be performed. And that orchestral medium for it to be performed, could it be anything from a three-piece chamber music or a string quartet to a full symphony orchestra? The definition is very broad.
So the pieces that you decide, the instruments and maybe voice that you decide to put all together, has a lot to do with the delicacy or the power of that piece, doesn't it? I'm trying how does your own nuance get in there?
Well, I think ultimately the right answer is what medium, what are we trying to, you know, what was it composed for? Was it composed for a science fiction movie? Was it composed for a piece of modern dance? Is it composed for a Broadway show? Is it composed for a television? Is it an opening to a TV show? Or, you know, the right answer comes from ultimately what you want to paint with sound, I think, to me. And again, it's not all to me. It's a collaboration of what the composer has written it for, what the composer was the intent from what they're writing it for, what the producer of the piece that you're working on. There's a lot of variables that are in play, and I think it's the orchestrator's job to kind of wrangle all the ideas and then come up with a piece of music. I mean, my mentor Bill Brown, who's put the Canary in the course. Mm-hmm. Well, I think he said it best at one point. I think it was in the liner notes for the Crazy for You album. I think he said something that orchestration is just merely a frame for the painting, which is ultimately the composition.
What a gracious person he is. Emily, you're listening to Chris say this. Do you have any reaction? You know, it made me think about you trying to duplicate the sound of those trees. And then I thought, well, wow, what movie would that go to? Can you identify with what Chris is saying?
Yeah. I think it's all kind of connected how music is always about imagining pictures and visualizing what you hear.
You know, if for those of us who listen to music, and I play congas, but I don't play with any groups or anything. I just do it for fun. We imagine pictures sometimes too, but you know, we don't know what you're imagining. So it's interesting to hear that you imagine visual things, because, you know, I'm intrigued that I like television, even though I'm in a format where it's about the voice and hearing. You know, here you are playing piano, jazz and classical, Emily, and Chris, you too, and yet the visual is so much attached to what we do.
Yeah, it's also about connecting with the audience, and it's always fun to hear what other people imagine when they hear music or my music or anything.
Emily, when you're playing, can you see the audience?
Sometimes. It usually depends on the lighting, but usually.
And do you like that? Would you rather see them or not?
I like to see them, but not too much, because if it's too much, then it gets a little distracting.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Chris, when you're working with Emily, what are you teaching her to do? Are you working on orchestration together or something else?
Well, I got to tell you, you mentioned that I was a mentor to Emily. It makes me laugh because I feel like she's a mentor to me. I feel like every time I get together with her, I learn so much about from her perspective, and she's just so young and vibrant and has so many ideas. And I don't feel like I have a job. I just feel like I just want to sit there and sit with her and collaborate and listen to what she's saying. And it's not about me giving her some sort of game plan for learning how to orchestrate.
Uh-huh.
I feel like what's so exciting about our friendship, and I know the whole Bear family, and we've all become great friends, and I kind of feel like a godfather to her. And I feel like we just talk about what we're about to work on, and then we come up with a gazillion ideas, and we collaborate. It's a collaboration. It's less of a teacher-student than it is a complete and utter colleague and collaboration.
I love this. Oh, I just love this. Wow. So, Chris, do you think that there is, because you started out at a very young age too, is there anything to this new science we keep hearing about that says musical prodigies come from musical families, or they were exposed in utero and then they resonate to the sound? What do you think of all that?
I have no idea. I don't even know what to comment on that. When I met Emily, she was so extraordinary, and she had so much artistic energy just coming from her. And what's interesting, I know we're talking a lot about her as a pianist. Emily is this extraordinary composer, and she thinks orchestrally as opposed to, I remember when I was a kid, before I studied the orchestra, I was just playing piano and thinking she is much more advanced in terms of the way she listens to music than I ever was at her age. And she's hearing an orchestra in her head when she's composing. You'll hear more about her film music as she grows older, which probably may or may not have piano in it. I think piano is a tool for her. But I know from just talking to her and that she's always thinking from an orchestral standpoint. She's always thinking of a certain line being the flute line, or this is definitely an oboe line, or I definitely hear this on French horn, or this is clearly strings and not solo strings, it's sectional strings. I mean, she is that detailed in the way she hears it.
Wow. Emily, you want to tell me a little bit about that, about how you hear all the different instruments?
Well, I'm definitely still learning. Definitely, definitely, definitely still learning. But I guess it's kind of like a puzzle. And I usually start with the piano, or I usually start with one instrument, or and then I just go from there. And I usually do it from what I hear. And then I incorporate all, like, the techniques and what I'm learning and reading some textbooks. And when I'm playing it, the piano, I can hear an orchestra, but I'm still learning.
Yeah, sure. I guess, you know, Emily, no matter what age you are, you're still learning. You know, I guess that's our whole journey, right?
Yeah.
This is 12-year-old pianist and orchestrator Emily Bear talking with us. Her music is posted now at our website, along with information about her performances in Clinton and New Haven, Connecticut in August. That's in Clinton, and October in New Haven. Emily was discovered, we'll say, by her co-mentor, Quincy Jones, when she was around 8. And we're on with her other mentor, the award-winning orchestrator Chris Jahnke. And we have all kinds of articles that relate to the child prodigy and all this stuff. So, Emily, is it weird to be asked about your creative process. And Chris, I ask you that too. You know, it's so natural for many just to do a thing. And then people like me come along and start asking you to explain yourself. And sometimes there are just no words for things. You know, I like your idea, Emily, where somebody tells a story and then you just start playing. You know, I wish we were together and we had the piano for you.
Oh, yeah, me too.
You know, we could try it out. You're not near the piano, right?
Not at the moment, but I could be.
You want to walk over to one?
Sure.
Okay, sure.
Take a few seconds.
Okay. So, Chris, this would be a kind of fun experiment. Chris, you want to tell a story? And see what, I mean, we're making this up on the fly. Why not? This is collaboration. So we'll get a story going and we'll wait. We'll see. Emily will get to her piano and then let's just see what happens. Well, gosh, it means she's got to play with one hand, I think. So I forgot about that. How are we going to do this?
Maybe the story is I'm on an iPhone in Midtown and I'm afraid I'm going to get cut off because of reception.
See, that's not a very...
And I'm in the middle of a radio interview and I'm afraid the phone's going to die or something.
Emily,
it's an awful attempt at a story, but it's kind of what I'm thinking at the moment.
Okay, so Emily, you think that's not such a good story, right?
Okay, let's try to... okay, you're... in Midtown, and you're on an iPhone, and you're on an interview, and you're trying not to get cut off.
She's going to do it. Watch. She'll totally do it. Watch.
Okay. How am I supposed to do this? Hold the phone, play the piano, hold the phone.
You can put the phone down on the piano if you want. That is so good, huh, Chris? Emily.
Oh, Emily, I wonder if those holes, was that when the reception cut in and out and you couldn't hear a couple words in the sentence I was saying or something?
What?
No, I think it was a bad joke. Don't worry about it.
Emily, I like that because it had this flow to it, like we're having conversation, but it also had this tension, you know, this kind of nervous-making energy.
Yeah.
Is that what you were trying for?
Yeah, I would say that's pretty accurate.
Yeah? Or were you just playing whatever?
I was trying to make a fit.
Make a scene, right? That was great. I love that. Here's what we're going to do, Emily. I want to tell people about your concert here in Clinton, Connecticut, and in New Haven, Connecticut. So
yeah. So the Clinton one is going to be on October 16th.
Okay. That's a reverse, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
And it's going to be with a jazz trio, and it's August 17th.
Yeah, in Clinton. That's right. With the George Flynn Classical Concert Series.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't wait for that.
Me too.
You know, and then in October, I know you're coming back again to play with the New Haven Symphony, right?
Yeah, it's going to be October 16th and 19th, and it is going to be a blast.
Oh, that is so cool. Okay, well, Emily, let me try this because we're going to take a break, and so I want to let you go, and Chris, you too, Chris Yonke. Emily Bear, age 12, talking to us from Chicago. The two of you, thank you so much. Emily, I hope whatever you want to do, the way you want to do it. I know it's a lot of hard work too, but I hope you always keep that sense of fun in your work, okay?
Oh, thank you. And just to let you know, it is going to be the first performance with Chris. I can't wait.
Oh, Chris, what are you going to play?
You mean with the New Haven Symphony?
Is that the one you're going to do, or are you going to do the Clinton one?
Yeah. No, I'm going to do the New Haven Symphony concert. We're doing Rhapsody in Blue and a premiere of the Gershwin, the overture to Crazy for You, the Broadway show from 1991.
Yeah.
Bill Brone has scored it for a symphony orchestra, and we'll premiere that overture in a symphonic form.
Oh, wow.
As well as Emily will play Rhapsody in Blue, and then a couple of Emily's pieces that she's composed that she wrote for orchestra. A couple of little surprises. But yeah,
and don't forget the best one.
What's the best one?
Bumble Bear
Boogie. I arranged for Emily. It was one of the first things I did when we first met, and it's an arrangement of the Rimsky-Korsakov Flight of the Bumblebee mixed with there was a piano piece written years ago that Liberace used to perform called Bumble Boogie, and it was basically the two pieces. It was like it was a boogie woogie piano. Left hand with the right hand of the bumblebee pattern in Flight of the Bumblebee.
Wow.
And I wrote an arrangement for Emily, specifically for Emily, featuring her out in front of the orchestra playing piano. So it's kind of an orchestrated arrangement of that. So it should be a fun concert. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, both of those concerts. They're on our website right now at WNPR.org. So Emily Bear and Chris Jahnke, thank you both so much. And we're going to open the phones now to talk about how do you think you could get a little more creativity in your life? If you've found a way, tell us your story, because it's going to inspire everybody else. 203-776-WNPR. Thanks, you two.
Thank you, Faith. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Fun.
I'm Faith Middleton. It is great to have you listening. Thank you so much. What a time this has been, talking with Emily Bear, 12 years old, the most remarkable pianist and composer, orchestrator, and Chris Jahnke, who got a start here in Connecticut at the Goodspeed, who's one of her mentors, although, as he puts it wisely, they're collaborators, Emily and Chris. They just work together and do great things. So we've decided to turn this now into a call-in show on creativity. So do you have a creative project? We've just heard a demonstration of, you know, when it's, you feel in your life, I wish I had a little bit more creativity in my life, and how am I going to get it? And I think that the power of example is all we need sometimes to just push us down that path. So if you have a creative project of any kind, call and tell us about it. 203-776-WNPR. That's an easy way to remember it. 203-776-9677. We have on the line one of my favorite collaborators, creative people that I know, is the New Haven psychologist, Dr. Nancy Horn. Nancy, hey.
Hello, Faye.
Normally, I know you're in L.A. at the moment. Normally, you'd be right here across from me. So I appreciate you doing this.
So, talk about the subject. I love this subject.
Oh, I know. We just had this 12-year-old Emily Bear on the show. She's a jazz pianist.
And I heard her. I heard it.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, it was terrific. Really terrific.
Yeah. So, Nancy, what is it that any of us can do to actually take a step toward?
Well,
go ahead. No, I'm sorry. I'm interrupting. Go ahead.
The first thing that comes to my mind, well, there's several things, but the first thing that comes to my mind is to get exposed to the area that you're interested in. I went to see a Matisse exhibit, you know, where all the paintings were by Matisse, and I came home and I painted a Matisse of my daughter. And I'm not really a painter. So
it was
very fun, but I was just sort of immersed in it. One time I left an Andrew Wyeth exhibit, and I was taking the train home from Philadelphia, and I was looking outside the window at a sort of no scenery whatsoever, sort of the ground, and the ground all looked like Andrew Wyeth. So, you know, those kinds of exposures help with creativity.
Huh. It makes me think about how, you know, we have what they say in that area of the brain where all these connections are made. You know, depending on what you're exposed to, the more it fires. And so,
right. Yeah,
that's what you're making me think of.
And then the other point is you want to learn all of the, you want to learn the medium, you want to learn the techniques. If you're knitting, you want to be able to knit your own creative project. You need to know things like how to make a cable stitch and how to use different colors of yarn. And you need to learn those things. If you're doing music, you need to know something about chord structure, or you know, how music is put together. And that's where the education comes in. Now, on the other hand, you can have people who educate, and they just talk about rules, and then that can really dampen creativity.
Have you seen that happen? Have you ever seen anyone?
Oh, yeah, I took an art class. Because I thought, oh, geez, I think maybe I could learn to do art. And he spoke too much about what I should or shouldn't do, and it really made me not want to do art. And so I think the rules feed right into our censor, the part of us that says, oh, it's not going to be good enough, or, you know, maybe we've got to do it the right way, and that does hamper things. But knowing the feel, our brains are so brilliant that if we know the material in the creative medium, our brains are so smart it can generate creatively, namely without our consciously working at it, a brilliant creative product. Think jazz musicians, you know, they're sometimes surprised when they hear the tape of what they just played, because they had no idea what was happening. I mean, they didn't control what was happening. And it's almost like they're listening to another person. And that was their brain doing this brilliant putting together of different licks and chord structures.
This makes it so exciting to hear you talk about that. Here's our number. If you are working on some kind of creative project, please call in and tell us about it and sort of pass on the inspiration to somebody else who just needs a little nudge. 203-776-WNPR. And if you want to know more about the Emily Bear concerts in Connecticut this summer in August in Clinton with the George Flynn series, and also our discussion about child prodigies and what fetuses can hear in the womb. Nancy, we have an article, a couple scientific articles posted. There's a neuroscientist who said that they decided to get to babies, after birth, obviously, who had been exposed to certain sounds when they were in utero, and then to embed those sounds now that they were in this world and see if they could detect, by putting all these wires on their heads, a recognition of those sounds and sound patterns were, and they did. The babies all knew these sounds, so they had heard them in utero.
Yeah, I can definitely believe that. I mean, I can definitely believe that. The brain is so brilliant. But I don't know, but it definitely makes sense to me that it could happen.
Here's what upset me about that, because I had gone to a Tina Turner concert in Boston, and, you know, here she was, I don't know, in her 60s, I think, and it was just mind-blowing to see her. But who opens for her first but Cyndi Lauper? And she looked to be about, I don't know, how many months pregnant. And the music was so deafening. And she was Cyndi Lauper, you know, jumping all over the place. And I began to be so upset for this baby. I kept thinking, oh, my God, what does this sound like to this baby? Is this okay? You know, and I've never, and now I'm reading this scientific article and I'm thinking, well, I mean, I'd love to know, did that child end up as a musician?
Or have hearing damage? No, I really don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
I have faith that babies are fairly well protected in the womb, but yeah. You're right. Those two stories would definitely contradict each other, that's for sure.
Let's take a call. Jean Faith Middleton with Dr. Nancy Horn. Go ahead, Jean.
Oh, hi, Faith. Hi, Doctor. Yeah, you know, that what you had on today, Faith, reminded me of the show on NPR that I love on Sunday nights, From the Top.
Yeah.
I listen to it without missing it every Sunday night. If I'm out, I will be home to listen to it. I love to listen to those kids. They're amazing. Just like Emily, she was amazing. I started playing guitar when I was very young, probably third or fourth grade, and I've been playing ever since. Kind of took about a 10-year sabbatical in there, and I just picked it up again recently because friends were bugging me. Why aren't you playing anymore? Why aren't you singing? And you were talking about creativity. I started, when I first started playing, I was just taking lessons and loving to listen to the teacher play, because, you know, we all like to listen to the teacher play because he's so much better than we think we are. Mm-hmm. And then as I got older, I was in scouting my whole life, and I started playing guitar for camporees and jamborees and things like that. And then I started going to convalescent homes and playing with sing-alongs, and then I played in church. I don't so much like to perform as I do lead sing-alongs. And that has been something that's been a real calling for me, to just sing with folks and to get them to sing, to get them engaged in the singing and the happiness of song.
Mm, as a collaboration.
Yes, absolutely, rather than entertaining. Mm. That's really kind of not my thing. Huh. I really more enjoy getting people involved and engaged in what I'm doing.
I think that's true for a number of artists that we would consider entertainers. I think they really like that kind of communication with other people. Thank you so much, Jean, for being on the show.
Thank you, and I just wanted to say I enjoyed her part about when she was talking about the trees, and then she wrote a little song about that. I thought that was so amazing.
Me too.
Thank you very much for letting me share.
Oh, me too. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, Nancy Horn, that's an interesting thing to me about Jean saying, I'm not so interested in, you know, it's like the introverted extrovert. I'm not so interested in performing, but I will do it as long as we're all doing it together.
Yes. Well, you know, one of the biggest problems with creativity and something that causes blocks is that we are concerned about our audience. And one of the things that I try and do is help people think differently about their audience so that they don't feel nervous about the audience.
What do you do? What do you say to them?
Well, for example, you can, if you're writing something, you can write a review of it before you've written the piece, a positive review, so that you can read this great review of what you've written. And that sometimes calms the censor down. The censor is worried about the audience. So the censor hears this great review and says, oh, maybe it's not going to be so bad after all. And
oh,
we'll actually
good.
Let you write the piece. Okay, that's one example. You can also imagine that you're painting for a child, some audience that's not threatening.
Yeah, okay. And it makes me think about performance, public speaking. I'm interested in what you might have to say about that. David, Faith Middleton with Nancy Horn. Go ahead, David.
Hi.
Hi, David.
Hi, this is David calling from New Haven. I just want to say, Faith, I'm a huge fan of the show. I listen all the time.
Thank you so much.
Now, I've been a musician all my life, actually. I'm 25 years old now, but I've been playing since I can remember, since I was in diapers almost. And now I just started instructing at a place called the School of Rock right in Madison, Connecticut.
Yeah, I just walked by there the other day.
Yep, it's a beautiful, it's in a beautiful part of town right near the green there. But it's really interesting to just see, because the age group there is about from about 5 or 6 all the way up through high school students, and we even have some older folks that come in and take lessons. But it's just great to see all these kids, you know, every single day discovering new things and becoming excited about the things that you know, I was really excited about as a kid. And just to be able to be in the position of teaching it now and inspiring the students, it's really come full circle, and it's amazingly fulfilling.
How do you walk that line? We heard Chris Jahnke, the orchestrator, talking about how he sees Emily as his collaborator, and then in a lot of ways, I think he learns as much about freedom from her as
right.
as she might learn about you know, structure or discipline from him. So how do you walk that line, I wonder, between usefulness of real information for these kids, that stuff that's good for them to learn, and yet letting them play?
You know, that's a good question. It's always about finding the balance between what you need to teach them and what they need to get out of the lesson, and kind of exploring what they want to do and seeing how you can kind of use their strengths and their interests to get them to be really into it and want to continue learning. So, you know, as long as you can get some of the basics in there, the rest kind of just is on a student-to-student basis, and it's all about kind of nurturing their strengths and desires and trying to just make the best for what they can do, you know?
Yeah, that's good, David. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Faith.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. 203-776-WNPR or 203-776-9677. I liked what he said, Nancy, about kind of the rest takes care of itself when she was kind of worming your lesson for the day.
Yes. Yeah, and people giving themselves freedom to be creative. One of my favorite movies is the You Can't Take It With You with Lionel Barrymore and Jimmy Stewart and Eddie Arnold.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, and what Lionel Barrymore does is he just goes around and enhances everyone's creativity. He invites them to his house. If they want to build mechanical toys, he takes them bank teller, and he discovers while he's in the bank that this man makes little mechanical toys, and he invites him to his house to come live and make mechanical toys. And, you know, it's a delightful movie. But
because of you. Because of your tip, I watched that movie so many years ago, and it is one of the movies of my life. I mean, it is so fantastic.
It's a really adorable movie.
Oh, my God.
But I think people really do want to be creative in some way, and sometimes their work doesn't allow them to do that. And so then they do it outside of their work.
Yeah. Elaine Faith Middleton with Nancy Horn. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Faith. I loved your interview, and I always listen to your program. It's wonderful. But this was a very unique program for me, because I don't think you've ever had a young pianist like this. And actually, she's composing on air, which I thought was great.
It was amazing.
But I wanted to comment about the idea of creativity. And I think something that Nancy said about stimulation struck a chord with me, is that I've always wanted to do ceramics. And being a gardener and so involved with getting my hands into gardening and forms of beautiful flowers as well as just forms generally, stimulated me to go into a career of sculpture. And this is something that just took off, and it's been like 25 years, but just that core of something that struck me. And I think that was very important, to have something like that and not be afraid to go ahead and do it.
Thank you so much, Elaine. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Dr. Nancy Horn, normally in New Haven in the studio with us. Thank you so much, our psychologist on the air.
Thank you.
All right. As always, this show is about the richness of life, and you can find the books, people, concerts, great recipes, and value wines that we feature right now at WNPR.org. Click on Programs. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.